Thank you, Henry. Now, please welcome Brian Clofis from Planet.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brian Clofis from Planet Labs, and I'm here today to talk to you about our recent deployment of 88 satellites and also a little bit about frequency coordination and frequency licensing for our constellation. So we just launched 88 3U CubeSats from India on a PSLV in February of this year. There was a total of 101 CubeSats on that launch in 25 quad packs. Everything went really well, no problems at all. And the reason why it went so well was that we had a kind of a Pathfinder launch in June of last year with the same team, also in India on PSLV C-34. And that launch kind of proved to everyone that we could work together really well. Planet, ISIS, ISRO, Antrix, we all got to know each other, and that kind of paved the way for this 101 satellite deployment. Here's a picture of about half of our satellites in the clean room in the Netherlands. There's a whole other table with equal amount of sats. Whoops. Here's all the quad packs lined up ready to go in India. And we had a beautiful launch on Valentine's Day this year, which was great because I did not have a nice reservation at a restaurant. So the girlfriend came down to the lab and we had a romantic evening watching the live stream from India along with everyone else in the lab. Pictures from the launch. They had a video on board. The bigger blob on the far right is CartoSat 2D, which is about 750 kilos. And the two smaller blobs next to it are about 10 kilo sats, and the rest of those are our 3U doves. And then there's more doves, and even more doves. And then the Spire cubes and the rest of the cubes came out after us. Commissioning, we talked with all of our satellites within 3 hours after launch. All the satellites were doing fine. We uploaded 3 megabytes of new software. And actually, the status as of yesterday, we've had 52 satellites that have been fully commissioned and are taking pictures. We're doing about 10 satellites per week for commissioning, and we expect to be finished with that in the beginning of June. As Brian talked about a couple presentations ago, we're using differential drag to space out our CubeSats, and that's going to be complete in October of this year, so it takes a long time to space everything out. We have had 2 sats that have died since launch, which kind of sucks, but it's okay because we were expecting 5% DOA and 5% in the first year, so we're still good with regards to that. And as of April 20th, we have 84 sats taking pictures of the Earth, including the ISS constellations and the earlier PSLV launch. I'm a ground station guy at Planet, so this is kind of a graph of what we're downlinking into the ground stations. We're over 2 terabytes per day now, and we're expecting about 5 terabytes per day once the latest satellites have been fully commissioned. The green section in the bottom there is the 12 sats that were launched from the PSLV last June. The blue section is our ISS sats, and the orange there is the new launch that just happened, and that's through the middle of April of this year. Now on to a little more boring topic, CubeSat licensing. The first 15 CubeSats that were launched up to 2007 all used amateur radio frequencies, even the commercial sats and the NASA sats. The International Amateur Radio Union did coordinate these satellites because they felt that coordination prevents interference and it's better for everyone. Once the FCC kind of realized that this CubeSat fad was here to stay, they started releasing some documents on how to get experimentally licensed in the CubeSat band, in the amateur radio bands, and that worked okay for a few years until the IRU decided that, hey, we've got too many sats in the UHF handband and started declining coordination for satellites that weren't strictly amateur radio satellites. The first time this happened was the Raven CubeSat from Blue Canyon Tech earlier this year, and they moved to 401 megahertz. A little bit more about the amateur radio licensing process. I gave a talk at this conference in April 2013 and presented a flowchart on how to get an amateur radio license for your CubeSat. And I kind of punted on the commercial license question in the blue box there. Needs not done by CubeSats before, we need a Pathfinder. Unbeknownst to me, Mike Safian at Planet Labs was going through the process in April 2013, and I'm here today to talk about how he obtained the commercial Part 25 license for our Earth imaging constellation. So you've decided that you don't fit in the amateur radio service, you want to sell your images or sell your data. What frequencies can you use? Well, it depends on what service you are providing. We're taking pictures of the Earth, so we're in the Earth Exploration Satellite Service. If you're looking at clouds and weather on the ground here, you can use the Meteorological Satellite Service. If you're doing basic research, you can fit into the Space Research Service. Each one of these services have lots of spectrum that's available to them. I put lots in quotes, though, because there are existing users, and they will fight you to protect their spectrum turf, so to speak. There's lots of information in the NTIA Red Book and the FCC table of allocations about all the frequencies that you can use, the spectrum you can use. Also, Attila Matas from the ITU gave a great presentation at the SmallSat conference in Chile last year, and there's the link to his presentation, which you can look at afterwards. So here in the US, there's kind of two options for FCC licensing. You can obtain a Part 5 experimental license, which is cheap and easy, but does not provide you any protection, spectrum protection. Or you can obtain a real Part 25 commercial license, which protects you from existing services. However, the timeline is designed for decades-long missions, not necessarily for these short CubeSats that we're talking about here today. And I just want to point out that all the FCC interactions are public and posted on the web, so you can go in and look at all of our licenses for free without signing up for anything. A little bit more about the Part 5 experimental license. It was intended to test out new technologies related to radio. You can pick any frequency you want, but I would encourage you to pick a frequency in the service that you want to use for the long term. Kind of respect the table of allocations. You'll have a lot less grief that way, get a lot less grief that way. Licenses are typically granted in 3 to 6 months. They're good for 5 years. It's only $70. And the launch integrator might actually do this for you, depending on which launch you're on. The downside is there's no you are a secondary user of the spectrum, and there's no protection from interference. And if you cause interference to the primary users, you must stop transmitting. Even if you've got important data to downlink, you have to stop transmitting. Here's the link for the experimental license search online. You can punch in Planet Labs into the applicant name and find our experimental license from 2013. But the Part 25 commercial license, unfortunately, the first step to getting that license is you got to get the lawyers involved. They're the people that can kind of guide you through the process and actually file the paperwork. I encourage you to have initial meetings with the FCC to provide context about what you're trying to do, and just chat with them about the best way to do it. They'll talk with you forever. They love talking about frequency licensing, and they're a really good resource. I also encourage you to pre-coordinate with all the existing users in the band. That way, when your public notice period for comments comes up, there won't be any surprises, and less people will object. Now, during your public notice period for comments, people will object to you using spectrum. In the past, it's the old aerospace way of doing things is wait till the last second and then submit a petition to deny, which kind of resets all the counters and takes many more months. I'm encouraging the SmallSat community to kind of pre-coordinate with everyone in the band, and that way these snafus don't happen at the last moment. We have successfully coordinated with the Planet Labs UHF and also Spire CubeSat ground stations. We were causing interference with each other at 401 megahertz, and we decided that spatially separating the ground stations was the right way to do it instead of going through the whole petition to deny process. We also were coordinating with Terabella on X-bands before we acquired them earlier this year. Then you get your license, and there's also some bond milestones that once you reach them, you get your money back. So the approximate costs, you got to pay the lawyers. The application fee for the FCC is $450K. Annual fee is $150,000. There's a $5 million bond, but you can get underwriters for that. So that's, you know, around $100,000. Ground stations are $3K per site. At the international level, the ITU charges $40K to publish your satellite in their international frequency registry. And we at Planet have a regulatory affairs person whose sole job it is to kind of keep on top of all the licensing at the international and the national level. And so that's another cost. You can search the FCC database, punch in Planet Labs on the, under the company name to find our license, or you can search by frequency or service or anything else under the advanced search on the left. You don't need to log in. It's really it's not easy to search, but all the data is there. You just have to hunt for it a little bit. So the real question is a Part 25 license worth it? You got $750,000, plus people, plus 2 years of your life. You know, when these rules were written, you know, the satellites cost $100 million and it took 10 years to build. So this was not really a big cost. Now, today, with CubeSats, you can build your entire satellite for less than $750,000. And from project inception through launch and deorbit, you know, that's less than 2 years. So I'm not sure that the existing rules are necessarily the best for the CubeSat community. Now, if we want to get together as a community and try and, to propose some changes to these rules, the FCC will listen to us, but we need to come to them with a proposal and say, hey, this is how we should do it. At the international level, the ITU is looking at making the licensing process more streamlined. They've written a couple reports. It was on the agenda at the World Radio Conference in 2015, and it's on the agenda in 2019. Things may happen, but not for several more years. So what I've just talked about is only for the US. If you have ground stations or you're building your satellite in another country, there's a whole nother regulatory scheme to follow. We have ground stations all over the world, and we still have licensing problems getting new stations online. There's also the usual license upkeep, filing reports. If you add any new ground stations or new satellites, you have to file more paperwork, and there's more things to do. That's why we encourage your teams to have a regulatory affairs person who just keeps track of all this stuff. And here are some references. The workshop in Chile is a great reference. There's lots of slides there online. And that's pretty much all I had. The video is the deployment, and that may play. Well, I take questions if there are any. Yes? Our latest launch was 510 kilometers circular polar. ISS is lower than that, and yeah, we're right about 500. We don't have, we use differential drag. We don't have any deorbit devices, so we're staying under the 25-year limit that Dan Altraki was talking about earlier. Expecting lifetime, that's a good question. I think we're about 15 years, and hopefully we're imaging for all that, but probably not. Yes? Yeah, so the question was, you know, you've got a ground station and you kind of do a spectrum scan and you're like, oh, hey, there's nobody here. Can I just use this frequency to talk to them with my satellite? That may be where things are going in 20 years, but unfortunately the current licensing system is not designed for that. We're kind of, you know, you're an Earth exploration satellite, here's your frequency license, this is where you can operate. That leads to a lot of inefficiencies in the spectrum, but unfortunately that's the system that we have built for ourselves. Yeah, cell phones do use, you know, CDMA or TDMA or whatever. Yeah, so our satellites, the main downlink is at 8.2 gigahertz, and they're all on the same frequency, and they're just spread out far enough. You know, with dishes, the beam width of the dish is, you know, 3/4 of a degree or something like that. So we can track multiple satellites on multiple dishes during a pass. So the question is, can we use the same frequency for all of our subsequent satellites? This is kind of one of our, this was the bond that I talked about. The milestones are, you know, first launch and there's a couple more, and then, you know, the last milestone is, you know, completion of your launches. You know, you're done with building your constellation. We're not really expecting to ever be done building our constellation. We're just going to keep launching more and more of them. So this is kind of a point of contention between us and the FCC. So we plan on using X-band for the long term. No, you have to apply once for the constellation that you're building. So yeah. Any other questions? I'm probably out of time. No? Yes, one more, sorry. Is there any regulation for maximum power that you can transmit? Yes, and that's in the rules. There's maximum power densities on the ground. So, all right, guys, thanks. I'll be around the rest of the time.